those of you that are not familiar with emerald ash borer, it was detected first in North America in 2002, separately in Ontario as well as Detroit, Michigan. It is suspected to have arrived in packing material from Asia. It attacks all species of Fraxinus as well, as far as I can understand. And with the work with Nathan Seeger and Deb McCullough, they believe that it arrived in the early 1990s with dendrochronography work. The females can lay about 60 to 90 eggs. The larvae feed on the cambium layer, which is the destructive phase of the insect, and it is capable of killing a healthy adult ash tree within 2 years. Now, the economic importance of this pest is extraordinary. There are over 650 million ash trees in Michigan alone. The uses of ash ranges from tool handles to baseball bats to recreation, which a lot of Michigan economy is based off camping sites. The nationwide estimates, if for just the urban street trees, if all of the urban street trees of ash are gone nationwide, it's ranging about $20 to $6 billion. However, if you look at all of the ash trees in forests, there are over 7.3 billion ash trees in the nation, and that estimated cost is going to cost about $280 billion for our economy. There is some phenotypic variation of this insect. Generally, is this metallic green. It's a beautiful insect, sadly, but this metallic green is the common phenotype. And the ones that we find mostly in North America are the ones with black eyes. However, they are found with copper eyes in very low amounts. And then we also get these brilliant pink, kind of a ruby color. I also have some in my collection that are brilliant blue, or you get these bronze colors. There's one in my collection that was collected by Sarah Smith that has one blue elytra and one green elytra, which is beautiful but unusual. The life cycle of this insect, they lay their eggs in the interspaces of the bark. They hatch out and bore into the wood and feed into the cambium layer. They go through four larval end stages. They form this typical S gallery. They prepupate, so they fold onto each other, and then they form the pupa. They emerge out of the wood as adults, forming this D-shaped exit hole, which is a good scouting technique to look at this for this. They mate, and the whole process happens again. And unfortunately, this larva stage does this to the tree. And we see this throughout Michigan, throughout Midwest, actually, through the many states that has been found so far, as well as in Ontario, that our wonderful, gorgeous, healthy ash trees are systematically being declined and they are dying. The native range of this insect is in China, the Far East, Russia, Korea, Japan, as well as some sites in Taiwan. The current range in North America right now is extensive throughout Michigan. It's also found in Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania. There has been a single population that has been located in West Virginia, as well as a couple, if you notice, up here in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and Ontario. We can't forget Canada. They're also battling this pest. So to figure out and try to answer some questions about this invasive species, I'm trying to use a variety of genetic techniques, starting with mitochondrial genes. They have been used for determining geographic origin of other invasive species. For example, Cognato et al. Used the cytochrome oxidase 1 gene to look for the geographic origin of the red turpentine beetle. It is a North American beetle that was introduced into China, and they were able to isolate where it came from in North America, and we believe that the Pacific Northwest is the origin of the Chinese population. And this beetle was devastating their pine forest, so it was very important for them to know where it came from. And it is also throughout North America, so finding the natural enemies in the Pacific Northwest to control it was something that the Chinese group was very interested in. Graputo also used the CO or cytochrome oxidase 2 gene to look at the Colorado potato beetle. It was introduced into Europe, and they actually were able to determine that there was decreased genetic variation within Europe, which actually they believe is a signature of a small single introduction from North America. Now for my research, I'm using the cytochrome oxidase 1, about 450 base pairs, and this is our current haplotype network. This big circle represents the main haplotype that I'm seeing, and as you notice, most of the individuals from North America are found here, many individuals from China. I also have some from Moscow, Russia, which is interesting in itself because that was probably also an introduced population. Because if you remember on the map, it's naturally found in Far East Russia, but it is not anywhere close to Moscow, Russia. So we're trying to figure out where that one came from as well. And there are some individuals from Korea that are on this big haplotype. There is one individual from Japan that is extremely different from everything else, and I suspect that this is probably a different species. It was combined a number of years ago into the same species, and I don't think that that was valid, but I need more specimens to be able to validate that. Korea does show a lot of genetic variation. We do find one single individual from Canada that is now showing differences than other individuals in North America. And we are seeing a little bit of variation within China, but that is not the those are specific populations that we don't believe that were the origin of the North American population. So we did attempt nuclear genes because they have been used to look at population structure within insects. The Mediterranean fruit fly, this looks like a big jumbly mess, so just ignore it. It's a pretty picture. But they actually used the intron section of these four nuclear genes to determine the population structure of the Mediterranean fruit fly, which was introduced into California. What they did find using the population assignment test is it more than likely the individual Mediterranean fruit fly that was found in 1996 was a single introduction from the Latin American group, and they were able to rule out other population origins of that single introduction. California did also have other introductions of the Mediterranean fruit fly. However, more than likely that single individual that was located in 1996 was not from the previous introductions of the Mediterranean fruit fly in California. So given that it was working, or it did work for other invasive species, I did try four different genes, wingless, phosphophenylpyruvate, carboxykinase, cytochrome C, and elongation factor 1 to determine if we could find population structure and see if we can get origin with EAB. However, this is pretty much most of my gels. I had many, many bands throughout all of my genes that I was looking at, so I just am not doing this anymore. It was not a likely candidate to be helpful. So we progressed onto the amplified fragment length polymorphism. This is a DNA fingerprinting technique. It generates various different bands of a different length. It is reproducible. There is a high resolution, and generally it is time efficient. It has been used to determine population structure in organisms such as the winter pine processionary moth. They did find strong geographic structure in this moth. This this moth is based in two different species, but they did actually find some genetic differences between these two species. And within this one, they actually did find a lot of population structure between the different sites that they actually did collect the beetles. It has also been used to look at population structure in an invasive species, the gypsy moth. They did find local population structure, as you can see with the groupings, and they did have one sample from the U.S. This is all in Europe, from Pennsylvania, and that is grouping with the German samples. So for emerald ash borer, this is the tree that we get with even a subset of my data. This is not all of the information, and sadly you can't even read this. But concentrate on the colors. So everything that does not have a color is from North America, and China is depicted in blue, Korea is depicted in orange, and Japan is depicted in blue. Did I say that right? Green, orange, blue. And what's happening is most of the North American populations are grouping with individuals from China, so the green ones. Korea pretty much groups with individuals from China as well, so more than likely there's no Korean specimen that is grouping with Michigan samples or North American samples, because I have Ohio and Illinois in here as well. So there's no Korean specimen that is actually grouping with a North American specimen. So the likelihood of Korea being the source population of the North American introduction is really low. Now, given the fact that this tree is one big jumbly mess and it doesn't actually give us a specific answer of the origin of EAB, we're actually using another technique with microsatellites that we're working on right now. Microsatellites are simple sequence tandem repeats, basically a set of DNA that just repeats over and over again. Because it repeats over and over again, slippage is very high, so mutation rates are also very high. It's polymorphic, and it is a codominant marker, so we are able to look for heterozygosity. It has been used in the western corn rootworm, where they actually were able to identify that invasive species was from North America into Europe, and they did find three separate introductions from North America, and generally there was low genetic diversity in Europe, so they believe that that was from single pop or single introductions that stayed within themselves, and then it spread from the introduction sites. It also was used in boll weevils. If you look at this map over here, they actually were doing eradication sites from boll weevils. And they did find a new site or a new sample that was found in this region, and they were trying to figure out where it came from. What they believe, given this haplotype network, it actually was grouping Rosales. So they believe that the individuals in Tahulo, I probably mispronounced that, came from Rosales, but there was also some individuals that split off on their own, so it may have been a population that was there but undetected for quite some time. So for emerald ash borer, we have 96 clones that have been prepared. 62 of those clones were used for primer development. 32 of those have been tested and are successful for amplification, and we're actually currently testing those for polymorphism within a group of our populations. So overall for EAB, the mitochondrial sequence basically is leading us to conclude that more than likely the North American population of EAB came from China, and one specific part in China is what I'm suspecting. And the genetic diversity in Korea is not found in North America, so the likelihood of EAB coming from Korea is really low. The AFLP markers are also leading us to believe that it came from a site in China, but that more samples are needed to actually use population assignment tests to make sure that we can confidently decide that. And the microsatellite markers are hoping, we're hoping that they will actually increase our knowledge of where this insect came from. Some challenges to do this type of work with an invasive species is it's very difficult to obtain samples from where you're not at. So trying to go to Asia and or find collaborators that are willing to collect insects for you to get a high enough sample size is really hard. In some of these locations, they just won't let you collect. I did have that issue in some of my populations in Korea and Japan when I went over there. And also, you do need to develop the primers to be able to do these. So for specific individual species, you have to develop these techniques and then be able to try to run it through. So that is time consuming. And because it's time consuming and the cost of genetic work, the cost can be high, and wonderfully it is actually going lower the more people do it. The benefits, I believe, outweigh the cost though. We are able to attempt to identify geographic origin of EAB. We have a pretty good idea of where it came from. With further data, we can confidently say that. We can facilitate the reconstruction of the invasion history, and we may be able to detect important changes within the biology. Since this beetle is not used to dealing with North American fraxinus, there may be some changes within the beetle that would help us be able to control it. We also can use the microsatellite techniques possibly to determine how many introductions came in, the main method of spread, because we are hunter-gatherer organisms. We pretty much like to bring our firewood everywhere we go. So that is a big problem to try to figure out if humans are the main spread of emerald ash borer or if it actually is moving along itself. And the number of the number of females that can start an outlier population would also be interesting to find out and give implications on control within that population. So to end, I would like to thank all these incredible people for helping me do this work. My sample would not have happened. All the insects that I have were pretty much collected by all these absolutely wonderful people, and my project co-authors and my major professor, and of course my funding sources, which this work made possible. Thank you. Any questions? Yeah.
Do you have any idea the sort of sample sizes that you would like to get for satellite work and what's realistic?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. There has been studies on how many individuals you need to be able to confidently figure this out. We would prefer 20 individuals to be able to run the statistics on it, which would give us a high confidence value. 10 individuals still gives us information, and hopefully we can at least do that. I have enough individuals per each population to run it. It just makes sure that if we can financially do it. Yeah.
A follow-up question is, do you have any idea of population structure from your sites? Like, over how big an area can you collect individuals and be confident that they're part of the same population?
Right, that's an excellent question. There's also other statistical tests that we can use to see what is the genetic population structure, and I'm hoping to actually run all my data through to be able for the data to tell me what the population structure is, not me saying these populations are not breeding. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right. I have many, many more populations, especially in Michigan, than I will need. So when I choose my populations, I'm actually choosing them so they're geographically separate from each other, not just very close. I mean, they're very separate from each other. So the insect itself could not move by itself from one population to another. But I'm also running the populations through that statistical test to be able to figure out if they're actually genetically different from each other. Oh, the native populations. Oh, I can do that with them too. Yeah.
When you approach making the climbing the loci for the microsatellites, did you start off with something like IFSR primers to get fragments and then put them, or how did you do that?
For the microsatellites, I actually sent off DNA to the Surreal Lab, and they developed the clones for me, and they sequenced everything. They sent me files of the sequenced clones, and I designed the primers from the clones that they gave me.
What lab was that?
The Surreal Lab, Serval Lab.
Savannah River Ecology Lab, Georgia?
Yes. They're fantastic, and it actually saved a lot of time, and it was cost effective to send it to Travis Glenn. Any other questions? Thank you.